innovate when you have a new modality and a challenge and maybe a scale-up issue there that isn't as well known. But keep the simple simple is sort of my motto when it comes to monoclonal antibodies.
Hey, smart biotech scientists, welcome back. We are in the middle of a conversation with Brian Kelly, who is the Senior Vice President of Process Development at Vir Biotechnology. And if you haven't listened to part one on process economics for antibody therapeutics, please go back and listen to that part first. And today we're continuing our journey. We're talking about innovations and the next chapter for antibodies. So stay tuned. Are you juggling the complexities of CMC development while trying to enjoy the beauty of biotech? Have you ever wondered if there's a way to simplify bioprocessing? Welcome to the Smart Biotech Scientist podcast, where we're diving headfirst into the very challenges you face. We're breaking it down, demystifying the jargon, and giving you the keys to unlock your full potential. I'm your host, David Brohlman, and I get it. With 15 plus years in the biotech industry, I face the same challenges you do. There's a way to simplify and streamline so you can remove complexity, you can skip trials and errors, deliver without delay your groundbreaking therapy to clinics and market, and still enjoy every single step. Do you want to learn how industry experts and I did it? Grab a cup of coffee and your favorite notebook and pen. Now is the time to take your bioprocessing game to the next level. Let's smarten up biotech. Now, Brian, let's make this very practical for those of us who have, let's say, the next blockbuster therapy or at least a very good therapy in the pipeline. What are some practical things we can do to drive down costs when we're developing a process?
I think about cost quite a bit. The company I work for is seeking to develop antibody therapies that could be used in the developing world for infectious diseases. And that would mean the very lowest cost of manufacturing is necessary to enable global access. So I've been studying this now for quite a while and written a couple papers on this. The short answer, David, is economy of scale. The biggest batch in kilograms of purified product wins over a different technology or scale of manufacturing that has a smaller batch size in kilograms, because I end up with costs of testing and stability that scale with the number of batches. And when I can have one really big batch, those costs are diluted by the large kilogram volume. And therefore, the cost in dollars per gram, which will translate to dollars per dose, is minimized, in my view. The second most important driver is stating the obvious for a fed batch cell culture process, or even a continuous manufacturing process. The highest titer possible also drives that batch size. I would spend a lot of time if I was thinking about an antibody for an infectious disease to go to the developing world. I would spend a lot of time in phase three development stage optimizing the manufacturing process, even seeking to increase a titer from 5 grams per liter, which sounds pretty good out of the block, to something like 8 or 9 grams per liter. I don't think I'll be able to triple it, but I might be able to increase it by 60% or double it. And that would mean a significant reduction in the number of batches I need for commercial supply and a reduction in cost of goods. So titer above all, an economy of scale as the baseline.
Now, if we don't have this possibility to produce huge batches because we are in a therapeutic space where the need is not big, or we are in, for whatever reason, what other tools do we have at our disposal? Because I'm a big fan of innovation, and let's talk about innovation for a second. Do you see any technologies or methodologies on the horizon that could bring down costs for these kind of scenarios?
Taking the first topic and initially, if it's a smaller volume product, then the cost in dollars per gram is not nearly as large an impact as if it were a blockbuster. Small volume of product demand with a 20% reduction in cost of goods is only a small savings. I'm making one batch a year at 2,000 liter scale because I have a super potent product and a low dose. You're not going to save very much by trying to minimize cost of goods or manufacturing there. And you might be shooting yourself in the foot if you're thinking about an innovative manufacturing process or flow sheet that might carry certain risks with it that conventional and well-established technologies wouldn't carry. That would need to be an investment you'd feel comfortable making, getting it to the point where you know it's robust enough for commercial launch, and you might be working with a novel raw material. So is your new supplier well-positioned to manufacture at large scale for your commercial product? Or are you like the first customer to put that raw material into a GMP process? These are sort of the trade-offs I think you'd all want to be thinking very carefully about. And as a result, I can talk myself out of a feeling that we need significant innovation for antibody manufacturing on the process side. And so that is going back to your very first question. I think I might be a bit of an outlier in the community where there's naturally a drive to improve the way your company or that you would approach process development and manufacturing. But the maturity of the monoclonal technology for development and manufacturing has been refined over 40 years since many companies began working in earnest. And if we now look at the ecosystem of well-established innovator companies, multiple global manufacturing CDMOs who have very large facilities for hire in a competitive space amongst or between them, I'm not calling it a buyer's market for the innovator company, but it's really hard for me to argue we would walk away from that. Another quick way to address your question would be save your innovation dollars, your innovation FTEs for the complex modalities that are coming down the pike for some of the gene therapies that have more complicated manufacturing processes or virology, the cell therapies, where this is a new and burgeoning field. I'm not saying you just ignore the antibodies because, as I said a minute ago, higher titers really matter. Invest that in late stage. And if you feel your internal technology is not meeting a titer standard, an industry standard for production titer, spend some time on innovating for cell line development, innovating for expression vector construction, innovating for maybe an internal production media or bioreactor management strategy that can deliver that. So those innovations are not revolutionary. In fact, it's kind of comforting sometimes to think they rest upon a long history of that being a common practice and even enough of a literature in many cases described in patent applications or expired patents or peer-reviewed literature that can be a guidepost for even younger members of the community who are working in the antibody space. So innovate when you have a new modality and a challenge and maybe a scale-up issue there that isn't as well known, but keep the simple simple is sort of my motto when it comes to monoclonal antibodies.
So if I summarize that in a short way, so what I'm hearing, Brian, is that the improvements through innovations in the very established antibody space will only be marginal, whereas in the new modalities, bispecifics, cell and gene therapy, we have tremendous potential to innovate. So let's focus on those new products coming. So this leads me then to this question, Brian. What will happen with MAP therapies? Will there be a change or will this stay? Could we foresee a new era in that long history, or it's now an established industry, it's a commodity?
Lovely question. I've been thinking about that a lot for the last couple of years. But the company I work at was one of the four companies that authorized an antibody for treatment of COVID-19 during the pandemic. And that taught a lot of lessons to my group and the community. Some of them have been shared at technical conferences, et cetera. I believe there's a new chapter coming. It would take the following form if we can make this possible. It is the thought that with these very large CDMO facilities that are being built in Denmark, South Korea, North Carolina, Switzerland, the extreme volume of manufacturing capacity is a new chapter in itself. High titers combined with that lead to really large batches, leading to low cost of goods and low price per dose and cost of therapy. Would this add up to a new horizon in the therapeutic areas where antibodies could be used or would be developed? Because in the past, they may have been barriers. I couldn't supply it the whole market. I would need to have a charge, a price of this product that would be very high in order to even support manufacturing way back in the day when that was an expensive part of the full cost of therapy. It's really not the case so much today. New modalities, we see a couple antibodies that are being reviewed for treatment of high cholesterol, for prevention of migraine headaches. I don't think these were therapeutic areas we would have looked at 20 years ago. The Alzheimer's antibodies are another example that has come along in the last decade, but may represent another example of what could lie in the future. So one is new modalities. The second thought would be going back to developing worlds, being able to command these large manufacturing facilities by funding from a global health organization or foundation could potentially make biosimilar antibodies, some of them for infectious disease, although that isn't a large cohort, others for even oncology or inflammation, but opening up access to low and middle income countries could be part of this new chapter, which unfortunately not been served well in the past, even during the COVID pandemic.
I love what you were saying, Brian, because this is still nowadays a huge issue, the access to life-saving therapies in the established field of MAPS, but even more so in the cell and gene therapy space. We have now breakthrough therapies to treat people in a way we never could before, but very few people can access to these therapies because of the tremendous high cost. Now, just out of curiosity, do you think these strategies that are applicable for MAPS, could we leverage those for the cell and gene therapy space as well to drive down manufacturing costs significantly in the future?
One example I think that could come to pass is in the gene therapy world, where the common use of AAV as the viral vector might allow platform manufacturing processes to be established in a way similar to the antibody world. Initially, early antibody development before the licensure of Rituxan back in 87, there were many net different and novel manufacturing strategies, but we've all read and know of an antibody manufacturing platform that is commonly deployed today. If AAV companies begin to share knowledge and perhaps come to a position of understanding that it's better for the community, better for the patients around the world, for a strategy to share manufacturing technologies without making them proprietary, patented, or a trade secret, would begin to build a community that would speed up development, perhaps increase the volume of manufacturing, and take viral vectors to a place that might look a little like current state for monoclonal antibodies. I don't know enough about cell therapy to believe that is likely, unless there are allogeneic therapies that can be massively scaled up. But I know the complexity of those products in characterization of the product quality and characteristics, batch to batch or scale up or facility to facility transfer would be challenging. In addition to, finally, the nature of route of administration of products that would require infusion, such as obviously a cell therapy, in the developing world is a real barrier because infusion centers are not as common or certainly not as accessible as they are in the developed world, where subcutaneous and intramuscular administration of a vaccine, viral vector, or an antibody would make a huge difference in the access patients in developing countries would see.
We zoom out now, Brian. Where do you see the antibody production evolve to, let's say, the next 5 to 10 years?
It's healthy today, and I think it's going to increase in the future. Now, the competition that comes with biosimilars has indeed demonstrated itself in several markets and several indications to be a motivation for companies to put time into monoclonal antibody development with a higher assurance, of course, that the product is going to be safe, effective, and approved. I think that will increase probably the number of commercial products, that the total volumes may go up a little bit for that indication by virtue of price reduction or erosion compared to the innovator product that would have been patent protected. In addition, I still see pipelines that have a lot of antibody therapies under development. A great article a couple of years back by Paul Carter from Genentech said, you know, the low-hanging fruit is gone. Now we need to look at the high-hanging fruit. And I think there's still high-hanging fruit there. And in addition, as many of you know, the focus on bispecific antibodies, which have a novel format compared to a standard IgG1, but which will share many of the same manufacturing unit operations, could be manufactured in the same drug substance facilities, will inevitably grow as a type of antibody-like product. And if you feel like lumping them together, I think you'll see an overall growth in the product demand and antibody manufacturing and development space. I know a lot of friends who are keeping busy with their bispecific process development because it's not as simple as it is for IgG1s. Maybe that goes back to your innovation question, David. Spend your time on figuring out a bispecific antibody platform that will work well and has high product quality and titers and yield. That's sometimes a challenge for various companies. So that would be a good place to focus as well.
Brian, what is the most important takeaway from our conversation today?
I'll try to sum it as therapeutic monoclonal antibodies continue to be a very important component of our world in healthcare and medicines development. The manufacturing and development processes for antibodies have matured significantly since initial launch of Rituxan. And that can be a leverage we could take in speeding up development and reducing cost of goods for antibody therapies. I'd love to have people believe that the simplicity of the established antibody manufacturing platform, its portability for companies, innovator companies, to be able to take a manufacturing process from their clinical facility to a large CDMO, maybe multiple dual-sourced manufacturing, is a huge advantage. So when we can keep it simple, I think we should.
Yeah, smart biotech scientists, this is excellent advice. Keep it simple. That's what we need in our industry. Thank you so much, Brian, for sharing your insights, your thoughts, your passion. It's been a huge pleasure to have you on the show today. Where can people connect with you?
First of all, you're very welcome, David. I appreciate the invitation, and I look forward to listening to more of your podcasts in the future. People can find me on LinkedIn, Brian Kelly, last name spelled K-E-L-L-E-Y. So be happy to take any communications through that channel.
Yeah, please do reach out to Brian. I will leave the links down in the show notes. And tell us what you think about our conversation and where you see the antibody space evolving to. I'd love to hear from you. And thank you once again, Brian, for being on the show today.
Thank you. And hello and goodbye, everybody.
Thank you very much for tuning in. And let us know what you think about this episode by leaving a review. This will help us reach more people, and we can empower more scientists like you to master bioprocessing. And perhaps you are wondering how you can maintain a balance between cost-effectiveness and high quality in antibody manufacturing. If this is you, I want to offer you a free 30-minute consultation to help you get started. So use the link in the show notes, and I see you on the call. All right, smart scientists. That's all for today on the Smart Biotech Scientist podcast. Thank you for tuning in and joining us on your journey to bioprocess mastery. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. By doing so, we can empower more scientists like you. For additional bioprocessing tips, visit us at smartbiotechscientist.com. Stay tuned for more inspiring biotech insights in our next episode. Until then, let's continue to smarten up biotech.